if your people are having trouble getting the ability to exercise, come up with ideas for them. How can they do it in their house? What is 10 minutes? There are loads and loads. Again, if you have access, if people have access to phones, there's loads and loads of apps. 7-minute exercises, 10-minute exercises. They're free. And it will walk them through something that you can do with no equipment, in your house, out in the street, at the park. Doesn't matter. If you have a homeless population, you know, they're walking a lot. So they're actually getting in their exercise. But if they want vigorous, like, cardiovascular exercise, you know, how many jumping jacks? How many squats? How many whatever? How many bench step-ups? You know, whatever.
Burpees.
Burpees?
Yoga. Yeah, we do a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. This stuff is super important. If you only have, if people can only do one of these things, they don't want to journal, they don't want to write, they don't want to meditate, and they don't have an ability to text or email, if they just do the exercise, there will be improved happiness. The second one is meditate for 2 minutes a day. They can set a timer where they just listen to their breath going in and out. There's loads and loads of apps. There's YouTube videos. There's all kinds of media if you have access to internet to be able to do something for 2 minutes. And they're pretty straightforward. Another one, and you can just sit in 2-minute silence. That's okay too.
What about listening to your favorite song for 2 minutes or whatever?
Yeah. I would say that if you're doing it to music, just tracking your breath, being aware, trying not to let your thought wander. If they do, it's okay, but just trying to really be in the zone. Could be that you're tapping along to it. Could be you got your hands on your stomach and you're laying on the floor and you're feeling the breathing going in and out. That's a form of meditation. There's also a lot of music online now on YouTube that's designed to be able to stimulate the vagus nerve, so to re-regulate the body. And it's like at different hertz. So it's vibrational hertz that if you put them on your ears and you listen to them. There's one called The World's Most Relaxing Song. There's all kinds of stuff like that. So if they look Google and they look up like vibration music or sound vibration or relaxation, sound relaxation, there's loads of things out there. And you put that stuff on, you got some headphones or you're listening to it in your car, it's intense because it's like pure like vibration. They may not like it, but it's pretty powerful. It's pretty cool. To listen to. And I usually have people play with that. So if they're going to do the sound kind of different hertz, I'll say, you know, listen to this one, then listen to one that's higher, listen to one that's lower, see which one like kind of like feels good for you. And you sound 100%. You can use sound for meditation, 100%. The other piece that he introduced, which I thought was really cool in terms of spreading this, is writing an email or text in the morning praising someone or thanking them for something. He did this as a piece as part of kind of the research, and he had other people do this. And the things that happen relationally in connection with other people, and you know, it's funny because he's like, at the end of, you know, the 21 days, I was running out of people to text and email. He says, so I started to email and text random people, like my teacher from like eighth grade, like I looked him up. But the idea is that you're sending somebody something and they're receiving that in the morning. And it's spreading. It's spreading happiness. Because how would you be if you were the person that received that text? Like, thank you. It doesn't have to be long. It could be long. You can write it long. But it's pretty cool. And when we talk about paying things forward and spreading things, this is huge. This is spreading happiness and gratitude. And that's part of being happiness, is feeling appreciated and feeling gratitude, right? So another thing that you can use is positive affirmations and mantras. Again, free on YouTube. You can get positive affirmations. You have ones for morning, you have ones for nighttime, you have ones for gratitude, and statements. I am not going to end up like this. I am going to move forward. I am in control of my life. So if we think about like the different mantras that people can use, there's lots of them that are really super powerful. So I'm going to show you some of the ones that I have on Pinterest. Pinterest is great for this. And you can print them out, which is super cool.
don't want the business account. I want me. Okay. So I have like a resilience board here. So, there's all different types of things I have on here, but, and they're hard to see because they're not very big. But this is like 24 things to do when you're having a bad day. Huh? Print it out for people. They might not like any of them. They might cross some of them off. They might say, I can't do that. Yeah, that sucks. Nah. But whatever. You can still give them to them. But it has really great stuff on it. You know, hug a cat. Well, I'm allergic to cats. Cross that one off. But talk to yourself like a best friend. Call someone. Read a book. Listen to music. Walk or run. Meditate. Deep breathing. Take a picture of something. Like, I don't know, what's a cat thing? I just realized that this has a bunch of things that cats. This person must love cats. But they're talking about animals in general. So this could be a dog, if you're a cat lover, cat, dog, whatever you have. Sing. Funny videos. Read inspirational quotes. Pray. Organize something. Clean something. Plan something fun. Forward planning is huge, right? Making plans for the future. Read a spiritual book. Read about role models. Positive affirmations. Journal. Watch a movie. Gratitude list. Read a magazine. Sit outside. They might not like any of these. So you might be like, cool. What do you like to do? Let's put it on here.
I've noticed that my grief...
Except for bad things, right?
I have to say nothing.
Yeah.
My grief response is cleaning. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really realize this until I lost a brother-in-law. Mm-hmm. And went straight away to my sister's house, which is in another state. And I spent the week that I was there cleaning her house. Mm-hmm. And then when my dog passed, which is, you know, not say that my dog was worth more than my brother-in-law, but my husband just remarked on this the other day, that after we came back from the vet where we had to put her to sleep, I cleaned. It was like I was trying to erase all of the evidence that she was ever there. And it wasn't that, it was that I was thinking, that's what makes me feel better.
Yeah. Well, and if we think about it says organizing on here too. Organizing is taking things from chaos and giving them order. And when you feel like your internal world is chaotic, your life is chaotic, putting something in order and having control and ability to put something in order feels good.
When I used to work at the salon, I had a lot of clients come in and they would cut their hair short. Mm-hmm. Or at least a lot of women would do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I'm going through a divorce or something. You know?
Yeah.
I'm going to cut my hair short. Because he used to like it, you know, long or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But they would come and like chop their hair off. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that whole idea that cleaning the metaphor of cleaning out emotions, feelings, states, pain, grief. It's huge. I mean, think about what it feels like when you have something like really messy, and maybe more so for women than men, but like a backpack or a purse that like feels cluttered, and like you clean it out, and then, you know, at first it's really hard because you don't want to let go of any of the stuff in there, especially if you like it all, right? Yeah. Yeah, toolbox, perfect. Toolbox is a good one. Backpack, you know, CD collection, you know, if you're old school like me. But anything like that, right? Any of these things, like it is therapeutic. And so, you know, it's an interesting way to do something simple that can make kind of a difference. This is another one. Thinking about the steps to get where you need to go. So, you know, you might say that on the first couple of times of trying to be more resilient or trying to tackle a new task or setting a new goal, you might get just from I won't do it to I can't do it. You might get from I can't do it to I want to do it. The idea of moving up these steps, and that you cannot jump, usually, from the very bottom to the very top. They're steps. letting people know that they're steps, and that's okay. They're steps. And sometimes you take a step backward. But the steps will always be there, and the end will always be there, and the yes, I did it will always be there. And how can we celebrate your steps up towards, you know, resiliency, towards goals, whatever they may be. I don't know if it's gonna make it. Let me make this thing bigger. I don't know. It didn't make it bigger. Just gave me a bunch more. I was hoping it would. I will read this outside. This is resiliency building skills to practice. So again, these are all free resources that you can just put, you can upload on Pinterest, and then you can kind of play with and see what you like. So this one is talking about grounding. So that's kind of what I talked about. That's feel your feet on the floor. Feel the gravity. Feel the pressure of your body on what is supporting it. Feel the texture of objects with your fingers. Name details of what you touch, see, hear, and taste, smell. So it might be that everybody's just becoming really dysregulated and you need to do something to do grounding that's not a communal thing that just gets everybody back into where they need to be. So it could be just feeling their hands. How do your hands feel right now? Hot, cold, clammy, chubby, bony, you know, whatever. Using your describer words. What does it feel like to hold your hands right now? It could be that you do it with your feet, having everybody feel their feet. But just getting people grounding. Grounding is grounding back into a regulated nervous system. That's when they use that word grounding. That's what it is. And grounding ideas are supposed to be quick, simple, get everybody back in touch, back regulated, then back doing more. This is a harder one. It's called slowing and titration. And that's slowing down your emotions, disturbing body sensations, like slowing down the tempo of music. So that's like, it's almost an over-exaggeration of the slowing response and taking things down a notch, or like putting things in slow motion. So it's an opposite. So a lot of people work with polarities, like there's like this really fast side and then there's like slow. So it's taking the really fast and just slow. I'm noticing that you're talking really fast right now. Can we just slow? And it's kind of funny when you play with it, but like this idea, it's called titration, it's slowing things down. This is also works with slowing down, and titration also works with taking things apart and just working with the small part of this. So like, let's say I have like a huge emotion, and it might just be working with one part of it, or a sensation, and leaving the rest for later. Not feeling like you have to consume this huge, big problem, task, goal right now, but just taking little bites. Consuming, seeing how it tastes. Taking another bite, slowing down the process. Tracking and felt sensation is thinking about the sensations in the body. So where is it sitting in the body, monitoring them, watching as they change. So, you know, hey, how's everybody feeling right now? Okay, we're gonna do a little activity to kind of either do grounding or activity or whatever we might do to kind of calm our bodies down. How do you feel now? How has the sensation changed? As we've spent this time in this group, has it changed from the lump in the throat to not feeling that anymore? How has it changed? Tracking, body tracking. So that's kind of that felt sense. The other challenge of tracking is not disassociating. So not cutting off, feeling it as it passes, but also just acknowledging that it's there. Resourcing is creating an imaginary safe place. So, you know, thinking about when we're doing all these pieces of work and there's all these challenges and there's all these threats and there's all these challenges and things going on, where do I go to be safe? Everybody that you work with needs to have a safe place, even if it's only in their own head. They might not have a physical safe place, and you might not be able to provide that. But what would your safe place look like? That's the reality of what we work with. Sometimes there is not a physical safe place. Sometimes it has to be in their own brain. Imagining safe places is really powerful. Again, a really heavily researched thing. When people can create a safe place in their mind, and they can imagine that safe place, and they can use their brain to go to that safe place, it does have calming effects. So doing that piece around creating what your safe place would look like, what does it look like, what does it smell like, what does it feel like, is it warm, is it cold there, are there any people in your safe place, are there any animals, you know, playing around with that piece. You can have people create images just in their heads, you can have people make a picture of it. Somebody might, you might have a bunch of magazines and say, hey, you know, like, let's play around with this. Do you see any pictures of something that you see as a safe place? Postcards, anything like that. Somebody's safe place might be a postcard of a beach in Jamaica. And that's where they imagine themselves to be while they're chilling, right? Relaxing. They might keep that with them, even if they're transient. This is the safe place, or this is where I want to be. This is where I want to go. Doesn't mean you're going there right now, but it means that that's a place where you can go in your brain to try and relax and be happy. Contact and self-holding exercises. That's really kind of putting your hands on parts of the body that feel difficult sensations. So that's when your heart's beating really fast, putting your hand there, feeling your heart. Some people have never felt their heartbeat. They can feel their heartbeat, but they have never felt. They have never felt what it feels like to feel the blood, the energy pumping through your body. Powerful. Another one is when you're breathing, and this is one that I would probably recommend laying down for, is just having them feel the breath go in and out. Kids are shocked by this. They're like, that just happens. And we're like, yeah, it just happens. Your body just does that. But it's pretty cool to feel it. The more you can feel what it feels like when you're calm, the more you can feel what it feels like when you're not calm. You might start off with feeling how you feel when you're not calm and then feeling how you feel when you're calm, but you'll notice a difference. And that's that body awareness that we're talking about. Community is huge. Everybody that builds resilience needs some type of community eventually. Your community might just be your dialogue with God or Allah or Buddha or whoever you use as a spiritual form. It might be that you have one person in your life. It might be the contact that they have with you. It doesn't have to be this huge overarching group of community. It can just be one person. It can be your spiritual community. It can be your power or your energy that you feel within yourself. And then pendulation, moving back and forth, noticing as you move back and forth between body states, the difference, how it feels, those type of things. So you can also find tag words. This one's called Sisu. And Sisu means extraordinary determination, courage, and resoluteness in the face of extreme adversity. An action mindset which enables individuals to see beyond their present limitations into what might be. Taking action against all odds and reaching beyond observed capacities. An integral and element of the Finnish culture, and also a universal capacity for which the potential exists within all individuals. So finding words from different cultures, languages, whatever, that your clients might like, and that you might want to use. If they're sick of all the pop culture words, say, where's your Sisu level at today? Are you feeling it? Create a new vocabulary, create a new language. All of our cultures have different words for these amazing, extraordinary capacities to heal and be resilient. And they call it different stuff. But it's kind of cool when you see the connections that with this idea. And it's universal, this experience of going through these things and having these challenges. You might name it something in your group. Your group might come up with a cool name for like one of these things. They may be like, I don't like that name. I don't like that perceptual maturation. Like, what the heck is that? Let's call it something else. And you might want to call it something else and see what everybody likes about it. You can also use really powerful stuff that has, you know, depending on what your client group is, I mean, I hope I don't offend, this one has a bad word in it, but it's powerful. It says, I hope you look at me and see the remnants of what you could not obliterate. And then it says you evil at the bottom. But sometimes that needs to have that power. It needs to have that power. These are powerful things that people have possibly been living with their whole life. And in order to let go, they need to have words that are powerful to resonate, to be able to express with. And so I think that sometimes you will find something like this and somebody will be like, yeah. Throw it out there. I mean, obviously, if you're working with little kids, you can't do that. But, you know, sometimes, you know, I'll tell you, I've worked with little kids where nobody has allowed them to swear, and that's all they want to do, is they want to just be able to say, F you. And when we're doing their therapeutic pieces and their dialogue pieces, and we think of all the people they wish they could have said that to, I let them do it. So I think that, you know, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be swear words, but what I'm saying is that, you know, provide an outlet and provide powerful things. They're used to seeing things that are kind of probably softened, sugar-coated. So it's okay to be powerful in terms of your mantras and your statements and the things that you're showing, as long as you're not being offensive. That's why it's very small, the bad word. but there's a bunch of other things here. Again, like what I said, is you can go on these sites. You can see this is four elements of shame resilience. So this is thinking about how you use shame.
There's no bad words. There's only meanings that we attach to.
Exactly.
Bad.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I love that. And you can tell people that. If you're going to open up that your group is going to allow everything, and we are going to use something, a word, to express a powerful emotion, it's not a bad word. I think that's a really beautiful point. Thank you. This is a shame resilience theory, working with shame. Shame is one thing that will probably be present in most of your clients and most of your groups. Shame is a natural response that's been developed through wiring and working with people and thinking about how you work with a shame response. So these are all things to keep in mind as you're designing and planning. So I'm going to work through the rest of the slides, but Pinterest, good resource, free, lots of ideas, and some of them you might look at and be like, I don't like that, but I'd like to play around with it and change it. But at least they're kind of in a free arena to get some good ideas from, which I like. So, positive emotions are fuel for resilience. So thinking about how you model positive emotional states, how you do that. It's not your job to treat their trauma. It's your job to model and build resilience, right? And that's an important thing to remember too. Letting go. When you are banging your head against the wall, you are the only one that is getting hurt. This is, sometimes people really don't like to hear that, but it's true. I have a lot of kids that are headbangers, bang their heads against walls. And letting them know that that's the only thing that's happening is that they're getting hurt is sometimes takes a year of therapy. But older people can kind of grasp that a little bit quicker usually, depending on what their behaviors are. What am I doing right now that is helping me in any way? So if you have somebody that is constantly engaging in dangerous, maladaptive, behaviors that are trauma responses and mitigations all over the place, have them, if they have the capacity, to stop and ask themselves, is what I'm doing right now helping me in any way?
Is letting go more of a, well, I guess for me, in order to let go, I feel like I have to forgive either myself or forgive whoever else it is that created that trauma. But it doesn't seem like it's, is it more of a religious thing to forgive, or is it in order, in just in any aspect of letting go, do you just have to learn to forgive and let go, or is it just letting go?
I think that you will hear different things from different disciplines. I think that you have to forgive to let go, because if you are still holding resentment, you cannot let go. It doesn't mean you're saying that what they did was okay. It means that you're also, forgiving might be forgiving your child self that couldn't do anything about it. Forgiveness can look different depending on, you know, what orientation you come from. But I don't think it's possible to let go until you use the energy that's being used towards resentment to move into something else. Resentment takes a lot of energy. Frowning takes more muscles. I mean, this negative energy and attitude and things that come with that takes so much energy and life force. Like, they suck life force. Resentment sucks life force out of you. So, I think that a lot of times people are like, why would I possibly want to forgive the person that hurt me? And you can say, you're not forgiving necessarily the person that hurt you, you're forgiving yourself for having, you know, not been able to do anything in that situation. And you're letting go of the resentment, knowing that something must have happened to them to make them that way. It's hard. It's really hard. And some people never forgive, and they're able to function at a pretty decent level because they're able to use enough life force to put into other things. But really, until you forgive, it's really hard to move forward in terms of taking that energy into a different realm. And it's hard to forgive. It's hard to forgive people that have hurt you. And it's not easy. And I think that, you know, what am I doing right now? Is what I'm doing right now helping me in any way? Is a good question to ask yourself when you're feeling the resentment feelings. Is what I'm doing right now, is ruminating, is thinking about that, is feeling resentful about that, helping me in any way? Maybe that it is in that moment, maybe that it's not. But that's a good question to continue to ask yourself when you're engaging in those kind of thoughts, feelings, experiences, behaviors that may not be behaviors that you that fit with your moral code and your mission statement. And behavior changes attitude, and it results in new neurons and neurogenesis. So this is rebuilding the brain part. This is that we need a connection with something larger. That might be a larger goal, a larger dream, a larger mission, a larger connection, a bigger sense of community. And the biggest way that we see this is through spiritual resilience. Developing a sense of purpose in life and a mission. That can be with any religion, any spirituality, anything you decide you like and that fits you, or it just might be you. But knowing that there's a purpose, a mission, a path, a goal, that's really powerful.
Don't worry. Mm-hmm. Be happy.
Be happy.
Play that song.
So, okay. Worry is inherited.
Oh, my God.
Worry is inherited in families, in cultures. Right now, do you feel like we live in a worry society?
Yes.
For those of you that are a little bit older, do you feel that there was more worry or less worry when you were younger?
No worries when you were younger.
It's changed. We have a cultural shift towards more worry and fear.
Is it because we have all this data that we can get to with the internet and all that? Maybe one reason?
Exposure.
Uh-huh.
We see things that we would have never seen before, and they make us worry. They trigger our threat response. And we copycat. So there's a lot of copycat crime, brutality, negativity, and it's so accessible. It's everywhere.
I mean, it's like a marketing tool.
Yeah.
That's the thing it's like,
yeah,
trying to sell you stuff. I mean, no matter how small or innocuous it is, if they use fear, like you sell a phone case because you tell people, oh, you're gonna drop your, $700 phone, it's gonna shatter in a million pieces.
Yeah.
You buy.
Yeah. We live in a society right now that is based on fear and worry. That's how we market. And they used to market through different avenues. They used to actually tap into like more primal positive response, like sex cells. That's kind of out the window. Now we have fear cells, worry cells, and the marketing on that is just so strong and so powerful. I mean, I can't watch a show where you don't get 15 pharmaceutical advertisements for something you need because you might have this. Well, I don't have this, but wait, do I have this? Now I'm worried I have this. If I don't have this, what if the doctor finds out that I do have this? Then I'm worried if I can't afford the medication. I mean, like, it's just like worry, 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 rumination all over the place.
Google something.
Self-diagnose.
Yeah. Exactly. Think about that, right? It used to be that to affirm a worry about health, you had to go into the doctor.
Right.
Now you can spend days, hours, Googling stuff, reading stuff, worrying more. Wait, it's not this, but maybe it's this. It used to take an effort to go out and affirm things. Now it's really accessible. So I think that, thinking about how we create worry, fear, how we harbor it, how we let go of worry and fear of a lot of this stuff is really important. And just on the worry and fear note, I'm going to play, and this is from the Buddhist tradition, and after this, we'll do questions and wrap up. But this is just showing from a different point of view because some of the stuff that you'll look at will be from different kind of religions and disciplines. But this is called Ending Worry Forever with Five Buddhist Teachings. That's pretty powerful.
Okay.
Now try not to pause it. Don't touch it. Thank you.
So all of those things are also true of dysregulation and trauma. So when we are worrying, our ability to be empathic is blocked. So we cannot worry and at the same time have empathy. The amygdala is blocked. So it's really important to think about that. If we are bringing worry into our relationship, into our sessions, into our actual interactions, into our workplace, our ability to be empathic, which is really the most important skill we have as helpers, healers, support workers, is blocked. So we need to work on our own worry, our own regulation, our own body awareness before we come into relationship to really be trauma informed and trauma sensitive. So I will open up for questions. If anybody has any questions, comments, when we are done with questions and comments, I have your certificates here. So if you come up and you remind me of your name, then I will search through the certificate pile and give it to you as you exit. Did anybody have any particular kind of questions?
Yeah, so pertaining to like opening a wound, how do you tend to like close it? Like if you're doing it in a large group and there's like a certain topic that you want to talk about, and how do you like try to bring everybody together? I know you shared some, but I'm not sure if like that will invoke everybody if possible.
So I would do a re-regulation activity and I would do a reconnection activity. So if somebody's brought up something, I might comment on how that might have affected me physiologically. I would ask anybody else if it maybe has affected them in terms of emotionally, physiologically, where they're kind of at. And then I would, you know, invite everybody in to do something to support that person. Whether, you know, it is something that we do as a community, like, you know, that we smile, that we give them, you know, a nod, that we clap for their bravery of sharing what they shared, that we, you know, that we thank them. I might offer a gesture, depending on where I'm at. It might just be a, you know, a head nod. And I would invite other people that would like to offer them the same gesture, you know, something like that, if they would like it. Something to create, to come back together, I think would be the most important thing. And, you know, really acknowledging, you know, where they're at. Also letting them know that, you know, we may not have the time in this space to be able to attend to everything that you've just mentioned, and it is big and powerful and important. So let's figure out a time to make additional space and time for this, you know, if you'd like to. And, you know, these are the ways where we can, and this is how we can do this. It will also provide a model for the rest of the people that if they come with something like that, that you can handle it in terms of that you know, the boundary of the group and also, you know, what you can offer as external for them too.
Just to kind of give you an idea, when I was in college, we had this class that was part of our Chicano Studies program, and it was called the Resolana class, and we met three times a week. But one of the times that we would meet, it was in a group, we would sit in a circle. I forget what the thing that they used was called, but it was used as like in other tribes.
Yeah.
They would have like a, I guess I would say like a rod or.
It's like a talking stick, yeah.
Yeah, like a talking stick. And you would pass it around and you would pick a topic or something, or you can ask around like, what was something that you want to bring up or that you went through this week or this day or something. And you would give the stick and then you could pass it to the next person. That person could decide to talk or say something positive or something or comment on something that the person had already said or something. And they gave them like the power to, they had the stick and they were in control and they could speak and they would pass it around. And you didn't have to speak or anything, but it was really nice because you, you know, and there was no time limitation or anything, but you could share.
And you can also say, would you like feedback from the group? Would, do you feel like you would like to accept feedback from the group? Is that something you'd like right now? And they might say no. I'm good. Actually, yeah, I would. Depends on the safety level within your group and you know what they need out of that moment. But I think asking people what they need, giving people power is huge. That's what we're trying to do.
what can we offer you right now? Is there anything the group can offer you? Or is there anything I can offer you? And they might say no, and that's okay too. They might say, yeah, I need a hug. And somebody might decide they want to step up and do that piece. You might decide you want to step up and do that piece. So, you know, I think being aware of a feeling, asking for what you need is the next step. Any other questions, comments? All right. Okay. Oh, sorry. It's my first name, Camilla. See, I think my name's on the front there of the packet. Yeah, it's Camilla Pecas, so it should be my first and last name. But I don't think there's many other people with my, there's not that many other people with my first name. So if you search my first name, you should be able to find it. But my first and last name are on the front page of your slide presentation. And you know, like if you decide to follow me, I would love to see the stuff you find too. So, you know, I think the more we create sharing communities, and I'm not, I don't do like Facebook and stuff like that. I stopped like over a year ago because it's too much. I don't want to be involved in it. But things like Pinterest, I think, are awesome. And they don't contain that, you know, critical social narrative part. So yeah, I would be more than happy to see what other people find, and you can come and look at my boards. Like I said, you might find some random things with kids' birthday parties and stuff like that, because I have three children, or recipes that I like, but you might like those too, who knows? Or you might have something I like, so. I open that kind of dialogue, that conversation, that kind of community sharing, because we are a community that should be sharing with each other. Nobody should be hoarding resources, ideas, things like that. We need to be sharing with each other, and that's super important to me as well. All right, so if we're all done, thank you so much for being here.